Welcome to Subtle Beast, everybody. I am your host, Foltz, sitting here with my main man and co-host, Mr. Steve Apostolopoulos. Steve, what's up, buddy?
What's up, bro? Man, I'm feeling good today.
I'm feeling excellent. I'm so excited about tonight and everything we have to discuss and everything that's just going on in the world.
Man, there's a good, jovial, lighthearted mood in the room this evening.
There is. I mean, Studio 1B is vibrating on just positiveness and good times. And we hope that all that goodness translates into this episode for all of you listeners. So strap on. It's going to be good.
I feel myself smiling. It's just uncontrollably smiling.
Yeah. And why not? I mean, it's the kickoff of summertime and everybody, it doesn't matter where you live in the United States, whether you have summer all year round or not. I mean, the arrival of summer, I mean, even if you live in Florida, you're going to be bombarded with all kinds of vacationers and everybody's going to be having a good time. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm about to head out to the beach here soon and I'm just ready for a little R&R.
Man, I have a place at the beach. I love the beach. I've been thinking about the beach like crazy lately and just figuring out how I'm going to get down there. It's calling me. The ocean's calling me right now, and I have to figure out how to answer it.
Having a beach house would just be amazing. I know you guys have that and enjoy it all the time, and you like to go down for your birthday, which is the 4th of July, and celebrate. Are you guys going to make it this year for that?
That's tough in the middle of the week, and it's been tough when with the kids for the 4th of July. It's always really tough. But what I found is later in the season has been really enjoyable for us in the last couple of years.
Good. Yeah, I mean, we're trying to get our plans together and figure out what we're going to do. You know, we're talking up our favorite restaurants and where we like to go on the boardwalk and different activities. But I'm trying to figure out a couple things different to do this year. And I was considering maybe taking a helicopter ride. Now, I know that you were just recently in Vegas. Did you do that? I can't recall whether you had mentioned that or not.
It was on the list. It was on the list to do, and it got bumped because as we were coming into Vegas, we're flying, you know, through the darkness, and then you see the light, and as you're coming closer, everything becomes more focused, and as you're landing, you really get a good look at the strip, and it kind of took away that feeling like I needed to take a helicopter ride over the strip. But at one point I was dead set on it, and then I didn't change the plans until we actually landed in Vegas. I looked it up on the internet, and there was a bunch of good reviews, and there's a bunch of different tours that you can take. There's one that takes you out to the Grand Canyon, and then there's one that just takes you up and down the strip, which is like less than $100.
Wow.
But a bunch of stuff came up when I was looking it up. A nice little tidbit on helicopters is if you were to fly in a helicopter straight up and just hover, the earth would spin underneath you.
That's a true statement right there.
It's true.
So like, that's crazy. So you're telling me that if I got into a helicopter, let's say in New York City, and went and hovered higher than like the buildings, that, and now granted, if we were able to refuel the helicopter somehow constantly, that eventually I would come down and I could land in California without a moving position.
Yes. And you know what I've heard? If you take that one step further, it only takes the shuttle missions, the space shuttle, 15 minutes to get from New York to California. Now, it would take a lot longer because you're obviously not as high up.
Right.
You're not in orbit in a helicopter, but it's the same theory. Theoretically, if you were to hover in a helicopter long enough, your destination would arrive to you.
Wow, that is so, so interesting because, I mean, everything comes into the play, the rotation of the earth and everything. But, well, you know, speaking of that, there is a big movement right now that if we were to mention that to somebody, they would completely disagree. And it is the people that are behind the Flat Earth movement.
You know what? How can you not see that? Anytime you're online, any whatever platform you're on, it seems that the flat earthers are hot right now.
They are. I mean, you go onto YouTube and there's just people out there that are, you know, just flat out not buying the whole Earth's round and the way that it rotates, and that and they have a lot of their own beliefs, and they think that they've been able to prove it, and they have a whole bunch of interesting quote unquote facts that they have to back up the theory. So I thought it would be interesting. I know we had discussed it about, you know, let's dive into this subject, and we'll cover both ends of the theory. We'll cover what the flat earth people believe and what quote unquote evidence they have. And then we'll switch gears and go the other way and produce some evidence there. And, you know, it doesn't, whatever your belief is, stick with it. We're just going to produce both sides of the argument and go with it.
Yeah. I mean, you and I do a bunch of research on different topics. And for this one, to go down the rabbit hole on the flat earth theory, and if any of the listeners here, either one of us say FET, that's the flat earth theory, or flat earthers or flat earth society, you know, anything that starts off with flat earth, it was cool checking it out. It's cool to look through all of their evidence. They have a bunch of math that, you know, they break out and they show you ways that they can prove that the curvature of the Earth is not real and that the Earth is really flat. And a couple of cool experiments that they did. So we have a bunch of facts here.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting, I think, because of, you know, all the topics that we usually cover, and, you know, I'll be the first to admit that a lot of the topics that we cover that I'm a full believer in. I mean, you talk about time travel, stargates, this, that, and the other thing, you know, I'm all on board. So it might seem weird to hear, oh, well, you believe and have invested in all of that, but then when it comes to flat earth, that you're not on board with that. Well, I'm going to say, you know, I'm not. I'm a believer in the globe and all the facts that back that. But that is not to take away from anybody that believes that the Earth is flat. And I mean, there's no way for me to say, well, come here, let me take you in a space shuttle and I'll go prove it to you. So I just got to go with what I believe, and everybody else has to go with what they believe.
Right. There's no way that you're going to talk a flat earther out of the fact that they believe the Earth is flat. It may be not for everyone, but obviously it's open for discussion, and the people that do believe that have certain views and aspects that should be represented.
Yeah, because there's, they always say between friends and when you're out, there's certain subjects you don't touch on, and one is politics and one is religion. Now, granted, neither of these are politics or religion, but if this is your belief system, that could be it. So, you know, if I run into any fans out there and you are flat earthers, I got nothing but love for you. And if you ever want to discuss it, we can have an open, friendly format to discuss. And, you know, neither of us are going to sway each other. It'd be like an atheist talking to a devout Christian. I mean, no one's going to sway, but if the conversation can stay friendly, we can have a good time with it. And that's what we plan on doing here tonight.
Right. I just want to get the facts out there, present the facts of both sides of it, kind of in an objective way, and sure. and see what it, you know, open it up, see what's inside there.
Yeah. So let's tear into this subject. Let me ask you this, Steve. From the information that you've looked into, as far as the Flat Earth Society, what evidence do they have to back up their claim?
The evidence for Flat Earth is derived from many facets of science and philosophy. The simplest is by relying on one's own senses,
right,
to discern the true nature of the world around us.
That's all you can ask of anybody.
The world looks flat. The bottoms of clouds are flat. The movement of the sun. These are all examples of your senses telling you that we do not live on a spherical world. This is using an approach that relies on the information of your senses.
Agreed.
Perhaps the best example of flat earth proof is the Bedford level experiment.
Okay.
In short, this was an experiment performed many times on a 6-mile stretch of water that proved the surface of the water to be flat. It did not conform to the curvature of the Earth that round Earth proponents teach. Many other experiments demonstrating the lack of the curvature of the Earth may be found in Earth, Not a Globe, by Samuel Robotham.
Okay. Well, you know that no one can say that there wasn't a whole lot of thought put into that, and you know it's really well put together, and you know, sometimes it could be hard to argue with those facts, because you know you are looking around and it does look like you're looking across a flat plane. But yeah, so I mean, off to a good start. I mean, they have valid points. But you know, we'll see where we get going here.
Yeah, did you in any of your research, did you find any connection between flat Earth theory that it's connected to a religion?
That's interesting, because that was one of the main things that I started looking for, because it was like I had said a few moments ago about how, you know, you don't talk about politics, you don't discuss religion, but this kind of could fall in between there or be misconstrued as such. But you know, flat Earth theory is neither officially or non-officially associated with any religion, and you know, throughout the ages there's been various religion institutions that have championed a flat Earth model for the world. But you know, unfortunately, you know, this leaves us with the thought that flat Earth theory and religions are It leaves us with little thought that the flat Earth theory and religions are symbiotic. I mean, they're not. How do I want to say this? They are not religion related. You know, both mainstream and otherwise, it still teaches its followers that the world is flat. Now, whether they're incorrect or correct, believing in flat Earth, you know, it isn't contingent upon believing in, you know, a deity or a higher power. So, right. So the answer is no.
Right. And, you know, most of the religions that are out there, barring a few, they were created before airplanes, you know.
Right.
The turn of the century, 19th century, or the 20th century, the 1900s, you know, that's when airplanes were
built, constructed, and
right,
put and into process.
From there, then you get your point of view changes, and then you get into the space travel. And let me ask you this.
All right.
People have been to space.
Right.
How have they not discovered that the Earth is flat?
Well, that it gets tricky here, because it starts going into you know, conspiracy and faking space travel and the exploration. But you know, from what I found, you know, a lot of the explanation of the space agencies of the world began you know, obviously during the Cold War's space race, and you know, which in the USSR and the United States, they were obsessed with beating each other into space, to the point that they each, you know, there's claims that they each faked their accomplishments in an attempt to keep the pace with each other, supposedly. But, you know, since the end of the Cold War, however, the conspiracy is, to some, most likely motivated by greed rather than political gains. And using only some of their funding to continue the quote-unquote fake space travel, and that it saves a lot of money so that they can embezzle it for themselves. But in light of that all, I mean, we got to take note that we're not suggesting that the space agencies are aware that the Earth is flat and actively covering that fact up. They depict the Earth as being round simply because, you know, that is what they expect it to be. So, I mean, it whichever side of the fence you're on, you could have your claims for it. You could say, okay, well, the Earth, I say the Earth is flat, And people would say, well, what about the people that went into space? Well, they work for the government, and they work for NASA, which is funded by the government. So they're all lying to us. So you can't win that one.
Remember our conspiracy theories episode?
Absolutely. One of my faves.
This was one of the big ones. It was, and this one is portrayed in movies a ton and somewhat mocked, you know, when they actually landed on the moon, there was a lot of people that didn't believe it.
There's still people that don't believe it.
The lunar landing, they thought, was trumped up in Hollywood, and that it was not an actual occurrence. And if you're into that theory, then the how have you been to space, and you know, can't you tell, that could lead true. And that's a great way for flat earthers to say, hey, look, you know, have we really been to space? You know, you're saying that there, you can look back at from space and see that it's round, but I mean, have you been to space? Like,
yeah. And there's been experiments done by the Flat Earth Society. There's one out on YouTube where a couple of guys, they send these rockets up.
And those rockets are so awesome.
They are. I mean, they got to be really, really expensive. But the rockets go so high, almost that they're out of the atmosphere, and then it seems to look like the rockets just stop. So they're saying that it has hit a dome or something like that.
Right. Yes, the dome.
Now, were you able to? I mean, as curious as I was, I mean, because when I first saw it, I was like, wow, why did they stop? Did you happen to look into that and see why they actually did stop, though?
It seemed to me like they were hitting like a secondary plane, like they were leaving, you know, there's like the stratosphere, the ionosphere.
Right, right.
It seemed to me like they were breaking through one of the levels of the atmosphere, and that there was much less resistance on the rocket, and that's what seemingly had stopped it from spinning.
Right. And actually, it's because of how high that they went that the rocket didn't need to be spinning that fast anymore. So what happens is the rocket deploys something that looks like... I want to say a yo-yo, but when we were kids, we had these things called knickerbockers that you would just like flick back and forth, and it would be these two round plastic balls, and they would just snap together. Click, clack. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember those. But in this case, there's like three balls attached to like a string or a wire, and what happens is when the rocket reaches that height in the sky, it deploys this and it kicks it out and it makes it go in a circle formation, and that's what actually not stops the rocket, but stops it from rotating so very quickly, because it doesn't need to anymore, because it's not being affected by gravity as much anymore. That's what I looked into, and that's what evidence was produced to me. To not say that if you believe that it did hit the dome, that you're wrong. It's just some evidence that I was able to find on that.
Right, and they could be deployed just simply using an altimeter. I've watched an altimeter as we were falling from 12,000 feet while we were skydiving, going the opposite way, though, coming back down. Then that one would be going up. So it would hit a certain level of height and then, you know, project those knickerbocker yo-yos.
Yeah.
And that would slow the rocket down. But it was a really cool video.
Oh, it definitely was. And to touch more on when you were skydiving, because you're falling so fast, and I guess they had instructed you to look out at the horizon, because I don't know what you were looking all around. It was making you nauseous.
Oh, that was a sickening feeling. Yeah, we missed, Sean Lineham and I missed the actual explanation of what you're supposed to do, because we went first. We out of all the people that went that day, we went first, and man, we really didn't get a lot of rundown. They kind of suited us up, got us in the plane, and I asked the instructor, you know, do you breathe out of your mouth or your nose? You want to tell me a couple things here as we're going up? And he's like, you're going to be fine. You're going to breathe either way. Just breathe however you feel comfortable. You know, if you want to breathe out of your mouth, that's fine. I breathe out of my nose. And I was like, okay, keep mouth shut. You know, breathe through nose.
Got no that pigeon far. Caught in mouth on way down.
Right. And then he said, I will tell you this. There is such a thing called ground rush. If you look at one point in the ground long enough, it'll the whizzing of everything past you and the change of focus and how fast that your brain is processing all this could make you nauseous. So we jump, and it was like a turbulent time. Like the first 12 seconds was just like a flipping around and a real loud noise and just a feeling that I had never sensed before. And then we planed out and kind of like put our arms out, and we were plateaued, like belly down to the earth. And I can't help myself from looking right down where we were going.
Right, right.
And the skydive instructor could tell, because the way my head was pointed down, that I was not looking at the horizon. So as we're belly down and we're in this free fall, he reaches his hand onto my forehead and pulls my head upward probably about 6 inches until my eyes hit the horizon. And all of a sudden, like, my shoulders dropped and I was like, oh, that's so much better.
That's incredible. Yeah, I haven't done it, but I can only imagine what the sensory overload is, because what I've read on it is your brain goes into initial shock at first because it doesn't know how to, you can jump off a diving board, you can jump off the side of a cliff, but you're not free falling for that. And your body just does. It was like, what is this?
Yeah, that was the first time that I had ever hit terminal velocity outside of a vehicle. Like I think it's 125.6 miles per hour or something around there. And when you jump, it really doesn't take that long to hit that. Like when I said, we had like 10 seconds or so right at the beginning where everything was weird. And then at that point, we were pretty much traveling at 125 miles per hour for the 40-second free fall until that altimeter said, I believe, 4,500 feet, I think maybe 4,000 feet. And then it was time to pull. He pulled the chute. I didn't get to pull the chute, but there was a second set of the ropes that come down with the handles on them, and those are what they use to steer them with. So I did get to steer once we were under, they call it under the canopy. I did get to steer a lot, but it was a fantastic sensory, like just a sensation. It was unique. I would never do it again, but
right,
that one time, boy,
that's awesome. Well, that kind of leads me into my next question for you, as far as research that you've done on the flat earth theory. So going from, you know, you're jumping out of a plane, so it begs me to think, all right, well, gravity's got you and it's pulling you back to earth. Did you find, or what did you find when looking into their theory, that why doesn't gravity pull the earth into a spherical shape if in fact the earth is flat?
Right. This is one of my favorite parts of the research, is why doesn't gravity pull the earth into a spherical shape if the earth is flat?
Right.
So what flat earthers believe is that the Big Bang occurred and the earth was created, and that at that point in time, there was a dark matter that was pushing the earth away from this explosion.
Okay.
And that it never stopped. That's part of the belief for the flat earth theory, is that the earth is hurling through the universe and hurling through space, and that constant velocity of the earth hurling through space is what's pushing everything down on it. So they believe, and when I say they, I'm talking about the Flat Earth Society and Flat Earth Theory, that you're constantly being pulled or pushed, whichever way you're looking at this this flat plane, down to the ground. So it's very similar to gravity for round Earth or globe, but it's a different theory, because it's just the hurling through the universe and it never stopping. It's just continuing to go out. A constant acceleration, just continuing to go outward.
Okay. I like that. That's how they explain it. And I'll tell you one reason why I stick with the belief of a round Earth, because as the flat earthers had pointed out in this example of, you know, why isn't it pulled into a spherical shape and this and that, is that our solar system or the Earth is constantly going further and further out into space. And, you know, I've admitted before, I believe in a lot of things that I can't prove, but it leads me to believe then the Earth is never in the same position. So it would be, how could any extraterrestrial life ever come and visit the Earth multiple times unless they were able to, like, track it somehow if it's always traveling through space? Because, like, hey, last time we were here, the Earth is here. Now, right. Now we got to go find it. I mean, but hey, it's a good explanation on why they believe that. So,
yeah, a couple things maybe that might not have happened, that the Halley's Comet coming back around, you know, maybe once.
Yeah.
Catching it once, but then for it the second time, you'd be like, wait a minute, that thing already went by us. Like, how are we going by that thing again?
Yeah, true. That's true. And I guess, yeah, because it won't be back around now, I guess, until like 2070 or something like that.
We'll be here.
Hey, yeah, especially with all the advancements.
Nanotechnology, man, if you can make it through the next 30 years, you're going to make it through the next 100 years.
Shout out to graphene.
You know it. So that's how they do gravity.
Okay.
You want to know what it looks like?
I do.
You want to know what the flat Earth looks like?
I do want to know.
I'll tell you. And it's unfair to the listeners because I do have a diagram in front of me.
Close your eyes and imagine through the voice of Steve.
The Earth, in this little diagram that I'm about to explain to everyone, is in the form of a disc with the North Pole in the center and Antarctica as a wall around the edge. The generally accepted model among members of the society. In this model, circumnavigation is performed by moving in a great circle around the North Pole. So when they say, did you circumnavigate the Earth? And we say, yes, it's more like walking around your block.
That's a good way to put it.
Than it is to be going around a globe. On a flat Earth, going around means just like walking around the block.
Right. That's interesting, because what I was picturing in my mind as you're explaining that, it was kind of like I'm seeing this Antarctic wall almost like off the coast of California somewhere. Or
let me give you some more. Hold on.
Okay.
The Earth is surrounded on all sides by an ice wall that holds the ocean back. This ice wall is what explorers have named Antarctica. Beyond the ice wall is a topic of great interest.
Wow.
To the Flat Earth Society. To our knowledge, no one has ever been very far past the ice wall and returned to tell their journey. Whoa. What we do know is that it encircles the Earth and serves to hold our oceans in and protects us from whatever lies beyond.
Wow.
That's what the Earth looks like in a flat Earth society.
That's interesting. Well, I'll tell you what. For anybody that believes in the flat Earth theory, let me just tell you one thing. That the research that Steve did on that, it enthralled him so much, he actually grabbed the mic out of his stand, held it in his hand, was leaning over onto our tabletop, and it was like he was about to recite "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" to his children. He was into
it. Like I said, man, the gravity part and the diagram are probably my favorite parts of the flat Earth theory.
That's crazy. It blows me away that's how flat earthers see it.
You can kind of picture it, though. That big ice wall. Like, you know, Planet Hoth, like it's just a huge ice wall that holds the oceans in. And
yeah, I'm seeing the Great Wall in Game of Thrones that they're always on top of. I just see this huge ice wall.
The expeditions of people going to Antarctica and they're like, we can make it, but they never do. We've got to turn back.
Right. I mean, and that's got to be some huge ice wall because, you know, as I had started to say before you were done, I'm picturing this ice wall like off the coast of California, but it can't be that because it's encompassing every every continent.
Right. Well, I mean, it's the edge. So, like, you get out there, like, you get to Antarctica, and you're looking in, and you're like, the sea ice wall, we can't, I can see the whole way down. It's just going down as far as I can see. And then on this side, it's going down as far as I can see, too. Like, we can't transverse it.
So, then they believe, though, if they could get to the, that they could jump off?
Or jump on. I think it's kind of like up, going upward, because it holds the oceans in. So, you would, I guess if you climbed it, you would be able to jump back into the oceans.
But oh, on the other side?
No. The other side, I think, is just the unknown. That's like the okay. part that they say no one has ever really gone out too far and then come back.
Okay. Now, I haven't been able to find any information as far as if the Earth is flat, what happens if they start digging? What if they dug a hole? I mean, how thick? I haven't been able to find that. How thick do they believe that the Earth is? Because in Russia in the 70s, they wanted to do an experiment where they're going to drill down to the center of the Earth, you know, and then try, well, we're going to go through the crust and the mantle and this and that. And they got down, I think it was like 23 miles. I think that was the figure. And by that point, it had reached 350 degrees. They couldn't go any further. They ended up sealing it off completely so that no one would ever go there and fall in. But even at 350 degrees, they were finding life. But 23 miles.
A couple of great films there. You get Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Right.
Which, did they just remake that with Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
I believe so, yeah.
That Journey to the Center of the Earth is dope. And what's the other one where they're going to get a comet that destroys the Earth and they have to dig on the comet to blow it up with the nuclear bomb?
Oh, yeah. The one with Bruce Willis. Yeah. It begins with an A. Armageddon.
Yeah, man. Those are great. The Armageddon drill where they have like a, it's just like a, man, that's, to think of like a drilling unit as like a capsule or like a, something that you would ride inside the drill and then you could just continue to go down. I mean, the Russians, they may have gotten far. It could have been like 350 degrees, but I mean, where those guys were, they were falling into like caves of magma.
Yeah.
And like floating down magma rivers. Those stories are cool. I really like those stories.
Armageddon is one of those movies. Whenever I see it on TV, I start watching it because I just love the scene when they were just supposed to, they were going to remote detonate the nuke. And then Bruce Willis, you know, and this guy get into an argument. He's like, can you guarantee me? Can you guarantee my family you'll hit your mark? And he's just like, yes. And they start drilling and they do. But you know what? There's another movie. I can't remember what the title is, but they actually had to drill to the center of the Earth because the Earth had was stopping its rotation. So they needed to get down to the core of the Earth and like a,
give it a little boost.
Yeah, blow off like a nuclear weapon to you know, create the spin again. Don't remember what that one was.
I think it is the round earthers. I believe there's scientific evidence that it is slowing. The Earth's rotation is slowing. It's not slowing very much, you know, like a quarter of a rotation or something, but I think there is proof that it is slowing.
Well, very good. I mean, it's nothing that we're going to be able to be like, man, I woke up today and the Earth's not spinning as fast.
I could feel it.
I know. Went from 11,000 miles an hour down to like
10,999.59.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's not enough that you can feel it. But, I mean, I don't know if it's changing anything or not.
I know. There's a lot of things that are going on that I don't know what they're talking about.
But actually, there is something that I want to ask you.
Okay.
Did you do any research on magnetic fields? How is there a magnetic field? Because magnets are, they can't be unipolar.
Right. Yeah, I did. And this is what I got. While it's true that a unipolar magnets can't exist, this isn't a problem for flat Earth society. And this is why. Because picture like a round ring magnet that's shaped like a flat disc. They're capable of having radial magnetization. In a radial magnet, one magnet pole was at the center, and the other is at all points on the edge of the magnet. A magnet like this can be found similar to the ones in loudspeakers and perfect replicas, or perfect replicas of what is found on Earth. So that's how they describe the magnetic field.
It makes total sense. I've taken speakers apart, and multiple sizes of speakers, and you can see the magnet on the back of the woofer, but I've taken it out of its casing, and there's actually, there's multiple kinds, disc magnets. A lot of disc magnets have a hole in the center.
Yeah.
So they look like just a circular magnet, big hole in the center, and then that entire inner part would be the one, like the positive or negative magnetic pole. Then the entire outer ring would be the opposite of that. So if it's a positive on the inside, it would be a negative pole on the outside. But they're fun to play with.
Yeah. It's kind of like with the kids with the fidget spinners now. They got they're shaped like that. Yeah.
Did you see the big fidget spinner story that there's a ton of mercury and lead in there?
I did read that.
They said it was like 9,000 times more lead than you're allowed to have.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not cool.
My kids are plastic, so I mean, I think they're good to go.
I have no idea how to tell them apart. They said you can't really tell them apart.
Yeah, I got them for them. I think they played with them for a few days, and they're not like the fidget spinner of our generation, the Rubik's Cube.
Oh, I could play with the Rubik's Cube forever.
Yeah, the Rubik's Cube was that. I used to get frustrated, though, and then peel off all the stickers and then just put them back on again. I'm like, I solved it.
No, I don't think you did, Matthew.
Like, we can see the stickers starting to curl now.
Jackson picked up a fidget spinner this weekend. We did a late run to Walmart on Sunday night, and he was really tired. He actually yawned and said, I need to go to bed, when we were in the peanut aisle where the popcorn was. And I was like, go to bed? We didn't even get to the toys yet. I said, you better energize yourself. And it was like half a visit. Like, he wasn't even really into the stuff that he's usually into. And before we went, my wife said, there's a brand new section of Cars, the Pixar movie,
right?
Cars Part 3 is out, and there's a package where they have Lightning McQueen, and then they have like wrenches, and you can put his wheels on and then put lug nuts on it and wrench it tight. And I thought, man, she said, Jackson put that in the cart last time she was there with him and said, this is mine, mommy, I'm going to take this home.
Nice.
And she was like, no, we can't do that this time, we're just going to get some Play-Doh. So I went there fully expecting him to be into this thing, and he was over playing with the Thomas the trains, and I was like, hey, check out this McQueen, and I held it up, and he was like, no, Daddy.
Dang.
I want to look at the Thomas the Train blind bags. And I was like, well, they're only $1.47, so you probably get like two or three of those.
Right.
And then I was like, well, you don't want to go check out the Hot Wheels or anything? And he was like, I don't know Hot Wheels. It's Thomas.
My God. Well, bonus for my wallet then.
Yep. And that was it. We hit the bubble bath and rolled.
Liking it. Okay, before we switch gears here a little bit, I got one last question that I want to see if you can explain as far as from the flat Earth theory. And this one is about passengers on an aircraft.
I knew you were going to ask me about this.
I know, because it's the one that that consumes me. So as a passenger on an aircraft, how is it that, I can see the curvature of the Earth, but flat earthers are claiming that you don't?
Right. Yeah, basically, and I have a couple more questions for you now.
Good.
the flat earthers are saying that the Earth's curvature is not detectable by an aircraft. There's a threshold where an aircraft would have to be up around 40,000 feet for you to actually detect the curvature of the Earth, and commercial flights only travel at about 36,000 feet. So yeah, they're saying that what you're seeing is an illusion based upon multiple things. One is that the glass inside of an airplane, or outside, however you look at it, is very thick because of the pressure in a cabin. and the pressure from flying up so high, they have to make the glass inches thick so that it doesn't break. So they're saying that there's a distortion for the view from outside at that altitude, that there's actually not a curve, that you're seeing an illusion between the curvature of the glass and the atmosphere outside of it, that if you're looking down and it kind of looks like it's bending, that it's really just an illusion.
Okay, I can understand that. So well, then I would guess that they would have to believe then that pilots of the stealth bomber are then in on the conspiracy, because that goes 70, 80,000 feet into the air. But I guess they would say, well, they work for the government. So
there's no stealth bombers getting sold by Boeing. That's only a private contract.
Out of Area 51.
Studio 54.
Yeah.
The people that fly any bombers are, you know, they're in on it. They're part of the government.
I knew it. What do you got for me? Let's see what I mean.
There's a couple things. One is the weather in a flat Earth theory. Like, how is weather created?
Well, this is how they see it. That many weather patterns are actually created just by the land itself. For an example, rain shadow. Rain shadow is basically where somewhere on the eastern side of a mountain range, you know, because of weather and clouds travel from the west generally, is deprived of rain and not just once, but nearly all the time. And they say that this is because the clouds are forced upwards by the mountains blocking their path and become cooler and condense, simply meaning that water droplets form and it rains on or before the mountains, thereby not raining on the leeward side of either an island or a continent, for example. But that other weather patterns are created by the simple geographic position, like the tropics being humid and they're surrounded by water, which is constantly warmed and evaporated. So that's how they stand behind their claim on weather.
Right. So instead of swirling around the Earth, it swirls around.
Yeah. And there's some things within that I can get behind as far as, mountains blocking, because when I lived in Hawaii, I lived on the southern tip of Oahu, and a lot of the other parts of the island, you'd see on the news that it was just pouring all day long, but we didn't get a drop. And they'd always say, well, because the huge mountain range in Hawaii, they'd be blocking the storm and this and that. And it used to make a lot of people that lived in Waikiki, where I did, extremely tired on that day because of the mountains containing these storms. There'd be a humongous plummet in air pressure. And it used to be like a common theme. People would be like, oh, I'm so tired today from the air pressure. And be like, yeah, yeah. But it would be like a southern part of the island kind of thing. And when I mean it made you tired, I mean, it would almost be to the point where you'd be like, I got to lay down. It was like it was depriving you of oxygen. It was insane.
You know, I had never heard that before I spoke to you this week when we were doing our research. And after I talked to you this past Sunday, there was a low pressure system that came in and I could literally feel it.
Yeah, it's something that can be felt throughout your whole body. It's amazing.
It was coming in from the west and the north, and it was dropping down, traveling east, and then dropping down south. And we were just barely outside of the point where the rain was coming. And it was dry outside, but it just had that gray, gloomy feel, and that low pressure system just zonked you, man. It just sucked the life out of you.
Sure did. And it was terrible when you were, you know, living in such a beautiful area, Hawaii, because it'd be like, oh, it's so beautiful outside. You know, the waves are up. Grab your boogie boards and surfboards, and I'd be like, I'm gonna be right here. I got to take a nap. It was crazy.
I'm just gonna check out the Price is Right.
Yeah, but interestingly, that's pretty cool that after we discussed that, then you were able to feel that and, you know, put two and two together that it was the air pressure.
We live in a valley, and there's times where I'll be driving from work in the greater Harrisburg area into the valley that we live in, and there will be no weather system on the Harrisburg side. And as I crest the mountain going into the valley, Peter's Mountain, I'll turn, because it's a 90-degree turn. I'll turn, and it's like hitting a wall. It'll just be fog. You can tell, like, as soon as you get over that mountain that the whole valley is fogged over.
Oh, wow.
It's incredible. I mean, on a beautiful day, it's clear. You can see for miles and miles. It's beautiful. There's a pull off at the top. The Appalachian Trail goes through, and it's kind of built up, and people take pictures. There's a bunch of photography up there. But on an ugly day, and especially in the winter, the way the storms hit, it hits one side of the mountain or the other. So I could definitely understand the point you made.
Yeah, it's crazy. When I lived in Hawaii, we didn't have fog, but we had vog, which is like volcanic ash mixed with, like, you know, cloud material and stuff. And it'd give you such a headache. You'd be like, oh my God. You'd look out and it would look like typical fog, but it was vog. It's like living on another planet sometimes, living in Hawaii, I swear.
So let me ask you this last thing here.
Sure.
How does the day and night cycle work in a flat earth theory and their seasons?
Okay. Just give me a second. I'm going to need to go... Yeah, let me locate my notes here.
Anytime that we don't know where our notes are for a particular question, we just hold the papers up to the microphones.
Yeah.
Shake them around like that.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time locating.
It's got to do something with the circulation, like spinning around.
Yeah, I can't find... What I did, I must have misplaced that part of my notes.
That's okay. It wasn't really that important.
Well, yeah, ask me the question again. Maybe I'm overlooking it.
Okay. So what I was wondering, basically, like, you know, as far as, like, we were just talking about the mountains and stuff, like, how does the day and night cycles work?
And
the seasons, like how does their winter and their summer or their spring, like how does that get broken up? Because in a round earth, I understand how our seasons work, but with a flat earth, you could understand how someone would ask, like, how does it work with day and night? Like,
yeah, I know, and I don't even need my notes for it. They're the flat earth theory. What they believe is that not necessarily are, as far as the globe theorists, that we're rotating around the sun. They more or less see it as, since the earth is flat, that the sun is basically just overhead and
it's rotating
around, kind of like if you took like a spotlight over the ground at night and kind of just, you know, gradually moved it around. And you know, obviously at some point where it was, now it's going to be dark. So that's how they explain night. And it's basically the same way with the seasons, that, okay, the sun is more concentrated in this area now, so it's going to be warmer and colder over in this region. So it has nothing to do with the spin of the earth, because to them, the earth isn't spinning around the sun and rotating. It's just...
static. It's just,
yeah, it's just static.
The center of the universe and the sun's rotating around the flat earth.
Precisely. Yep.
And that makes sense. We had the spotlight out all night on Saturday. It was great. We had a great time with it.
Yeah, I can't wait to go out and spend some time camping and such.
Oh,
love,
man.
It.
We had the fire going. It was cool. I had a good weekend.
Loving it.
So that was a lot of facts about flat earth there.
That was. So we covered that theory. So I think, in all fairness to the other half, that we should, produce some evidence and factual statements put out by the globalists, but not the globalists you think of.
the round earthers.
Yeah, the round earthers. And so we have been able to come up with what we're calling simply 10 easy ways that you can tell for yourself that the earth is not flat, and in fact, round. And I'm going to let Steve kick it off with number one on our research.
All right. The number one way that you can tell that the earth is not flat is by the moon. If you look at the moon, it's round. Now that humanity knows quite positively that the moon is not a piece of cheese or a playful god, the phenomenon that accompany it are well explained. It was quite a mystery to the ancient Greeks, though, and in their quest for knowledge, they came up with a few insightful observations that helped humanity figure out the shape of our planet. It was Aristotle that noticed that during lunar eclipses, the shadow of the moon's surface is round. The shadow of the Earth, the shadow on the moon is round. And it's the Earth's shadow. And it's a great clue that we're on a spherical shape. Since the Earth is rotating, the consistent oval shadow it produces in each and every lunar eclipse proves that the Earth is not only round, but spherical. Absolutely, utterly, beyond a shadow of a doubt, not flat.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm on board with that.
That was way too hard to say. Basically, it's just when the sun and the Earth are in a line, you can see the Earth's shadow on the moon and that it's not flat. It's a curved shadow.
Right. And, you know, just stepping backwards a little bit, I had read that that flat earthers believe that that the moon itself isn't reflecting sunlight, that the moon is creating its own light, because they said that they were able to temperature gauge it and it was a lot cooler than what it would be if the sun was reflecting off of it and such, which that's pretty interesting that they have that theory on the moon producing its
own light. Did you ever use one of those? The laser temperature reader?
Oh, yeah, yeah, they're great.
Oh, man, my boss had one. Let me take it home. I pointed it at the air conditioner. You know that thing was shooting out 33-degree cold air?
Yeah.
Just above freezing. It was awesome.
They are cool. I mean, they recommend those for when you're cooking, and the temperature has to be exactly right, such as in baking. They say, open up your oven door and fire it in there because you might be getting a false reading from the top of your oven. So you got to use that to make sure that it is at the temperature you need.
They are really cool. Laser thermometer.
I'm liking it.
So go ahead and knock around with number two, ships and the horizon.
Yeah, this one's interesting because the explanation that's given to us from the round earthers is actually used by the flat earthers to describe the same theory. And it goes like this. It's basically just the ships, like sailing ships and the horizon. It says, if you've been next to a port or just strolled down a beach and stared off vacantly into the horizon, you might have, perhaps, noticed a very interesting phenomenon. Approaching ships do not just appear off the horizon, like they should have if the world was flat, but rather emerge from beneath the sea. Yeah, ships do not submerge and rise up again as they approach our view, except in Pirates of the Caribbean, but the reason ships appear as if they emerge from the waves is because the world is not flat, it's round. Imagine an ant walking around the surface of an orange into your field of view. If you look at the orange head on, you'll see the ant's body slowly rising up from the horizon because of the curvature of the orange. If you would do that experiment with a long road, the effect would have changed. The ant would have slowly materialized into view depending on how sharp your vision is.
Right.
So with the flat earth theories, they're saying, oh, well, you don't hit the curvature of the earth. And they were saying that, oh, the ship just goes too far out of your view. They say, oh, go and get a telescope and you can still see it. But honestly, that telescope is not going to show you it unless you,
go get a telescope and stand up real high.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So right. I got that. I mean, I think that perfectly nails that as far as round earthers. What you got?
Oh, this one was cool. It goes back to Aristotle again. Varying star constellations. And they say, and you, if you ever hear on the news or anything, that there's something will come into sight, like they'll say Mars can be seen, and they'll give you actual coordinates in the sky. They'll say in the northerly sky, east. So you just walk out,
right?
You know, look north and then east, and you can see
it's the brightest object in the sky
where Mars is. Yeah, and it's red. So this one is. This observation was originally made by Aristotle, who declared the Earth was round, judging from the different constellations one sees while moving away from the equator. After returning from a trip to Egypt, Aristotle noted, "There are stars seen in Egypt and Cyprus which are not seen in the northerly regions. This phenomenon can only be explained if humans were viewing the stars from a round surface." Aristotle continued, and claimed that the sphere of the Earth is of no great size, for otherwise the effect of so slight a change of place would not be quickly apparent. The farther you go from the equator, the farther the known constellations go towards the horizon and are replaced by different stars. This would not happen if the Earth was flat. So you're traveling and you're seeing a different star, different star system, based upon where you're located geographically on the globe.
Right. And, you know, I don't want to say anything if it's going to be, yeah, I'm not going to mention it because it's coming up here. So I'll just leave it alone. But, yeah, I like it. I like how you keep getting Aristotle.
I know. Yeah. And then when you get the tough ones.
Yeah. Well, not only that, wasn't he Greek?
He was. Yep. He was a Greek.
Well, so we got to give him to you. So no Italian,
right,
discoveries out here. Okay. The next one I'm going to go with is just simple shadows and sticks. If you stick a stick in the sticky ground, it'll produce a shadow. The shadow moves as time passes, which is the principle of ancient shadow clocks. If the world had been flat, then two sticks in different locations would produce the same shadow. So, tick shadows on flat Earth. Imagine the sun rays represented by yellow lines hitting two sticks, white lines, some distance apart. If the Earth were flat, the resulting shadows would be the same length, no matter how far apart you place these sticks. But they don't. This is because the Earth is round and not flat.
Makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not to say that the information that we had on flat earthers didn't make sense as they were explaining it.
Did you see the video of the guy with the level on that Spirit Airlines flight?
I did see that. You know, he thought that he had proven it because of the nose of the plane not dipping and the level not moving.
Right. It was kind of like, how are we not shooting straight off of this globe and flying into space if this pilot hasn't changed course at all?
Right. The way they explained it was they said that you can't just do it from inside the plane holding your iPhone with a level. They said you would need a level that was the size of the airplane almost to even be able to detect any movement and such. Because, I mean, that would say, okay, oh, we're traveling at 500-600 miles in this airplane. Well, why isn't our skin being sucked back in our head? Almost to like... The same there. I mean, you would need to have greater, larger scale instruments to detect that.
Right. So it's all in the perspective.
Exactly.
I got you. So one of the things that...
You had just mentioned this.
Right. Is seeing farther from higher. Standing in a flat plateau. Basically, this has always been my dream, is to go to the top of the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
I think that would just be the most... the best sight, you know. I love New York City. I've been there, and it is so huge, and it's just amazing. It just seems like it goes on forever. And to get up on the observation deck, to me, it would just be the coolest sight.
Well, hopefully when you and I go to New York City this summer, maybe we'll have enough time to do that.
That would be cool. It's on my bucket list, but... That's a very high point that you can look out, and your perspective is that you're looking down and you can see further away. So seeing farther from higher is proof that there is a curvature of the Earth.
Right. Agreed. Okay. Now, what we were just discussing about planes and such. Number six on our research is, we have it simply titled, Ride a Plane. If you've ever taken a trip out of the country, specifically long-distance destination trips, you could notice two interesting facts about planes and the Earth. Number one, planes can travel in relatively straight line a very long time and not fall off any edges. They can also circle the Earth without stopping. Number two is, if you look out the window of a transatlantic flight, you can, most of the time, see the curvature of the Earth in the horizon. The best view of the curvature used to be on the Concorde, but the plane's long gone. I remember hearing about that when I was a kid, about how fast it could get to Europe and such.
Howard Stern used to talk about it. He'd always say, I have to duck walking back the aisle of the Concorde.
Dang.
It would do New York, Manhattan to London in 4 hours.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it would almost break the sound barrier, but they would purposely keep it under the sound barrier.
That's crazy.
Almost supersonic, almost Mach 1.
Before I finish this, we'll stick in with that. Isn't Musk working on something that could get you from like the East Coast to the West Coast in maybe like an hour or something like that?
We got to do a whole, we're going to have to do a whole podcast.
Yeah. We'll save that for another time. Stay tuned. So we're talking about the Concorde, but the plane's long gone. I can't wait seeing the pictures from the view of the new plane by Virgin Galactic. The horizon should look obviously curved as it actually is from a distance, because this plane is just supposed to be fast and humongous and way up high. So I'm thinking that this Virgin Galactic might shatter some of the flat Earth theories.
The theory is based upon your senses, and that's how kind of we started off.
Precisely.
The evidence that they say, and this goes along with my next one, look at other planets. You can see them, and they are round.
So right.
To when they say, you know, the there's great evidence that the Earth is flat just by observing your own senses. If you look around you, that everything is flat, and that also is, and it, like you said, the globe believing people and the flat Earth believing people, they have similar like hypotheses on both sides of the story. They just kind of put a little spin or a twist on it. This is people saying, just look, there's, you know, a whole bunch of other planets up there, and they're all round. Why wouldn't you think that ours is too?
And in different locations and under different circumstances, they show the same properties. Is it likely that that our own planet has the same properties as well? I mean, you have to assume that. And this goes back to like the 16th century with Galileo observing the moons of Jupiter rotating around
it. Italian.
I know. I had to be the one to say it. So saw that, and I was like, I was thinking about it for a while. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I think I remember writing something down about Galileo.
There you go, man.
Because he had described them as small planets orbiting a larger planet, but it was difficult for the church to accept it as it challenged a geocentric model where everything was supposed to revolve around the Earth. But the observation also showed that the planets Jupiter, Neptune, and later Venus were observed too, all spherical and all orbit the sun. So
how many planets do you think there are?
I'm old school. There's nine.
Is it true that Pluto got bumped?
Got axed. My daughters told me that they were talking about it in science class. They, you know, there's no My Very Educated Mother Just Served Us Nine Pizzas. My Very Educated pizzas. Mother Just Served Us Nine Nothing.
That's it.
That's
where it stops.
Yeah. Hey, I got Pluto. Pluto and me are still cool.
Pluto, you're out there.
Yep.
We know you're out there.
We may never see you until we are celestial beings, but we support you. I got to get a bumper sticker.
Support Pluto.
I break for Pluto.
Bring Pluto back as the ninth planet.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's a whole theory that Pluto's a ninth planet.
Yeah. Did you hear that guy? He used to think that Pluto was a planet.
You get a load of this guy. He thinks Pluto is the ninth planet.
We know it doesn't even exist.
Don't believe everything you were taught, Matt.
Yep, I know.
Pluto.
So what about What about the existence of time zones?
You know, I traveled with my family as a young man, and the existence of time zones can freak you out.
Absolutely.
If you think about it, or if you work on a time zone, like right on that line, we were traveling through Tennessee, and I believe that there's a timeline there because we were traveling. We didn't know that we crossed the timeline, and it just like totally, we went from 5:30 to 4:30, and it was just like, well, we're going to stop and get some dinner here. And then all of a sudden it was 4:30 in the afternoon. We were like, wait, this is weird.
Yeah, it can blow your mind. I'm working with a company right now where one of the offices is based in California and the other office is in New Jersey. And when I have to call up and have meetings, I'm always saying, like, okay, wait a minute. Okay, so no, I can't call them till 12. Oh, these people, I can call them regular time. It just drives me nuts trying to figure it out all the time. And I have clients that'll call me up and be like, hey, I had a meeting at 9, no one showed up. And I'm like, well, no one's going to show up until 12. So bear with them.
Right. Yeah, that, and you know, what else is interesting about that? Because we're on the East Coast here. And the West Coast is, I believe, is it 3 or 4 hours?
It's 3 hours.
It's California. 3 hours different. Because I had a lot of experience with a friend of mine that was out in California. And when we would talk, it would just be, you would be in a different part of your day. Like 3 hours is actually a pretty large part of your day.
It is.
So if someone's talking to you and it's 9 p.m. at night, but to them it's 6 p.m. or 6 p.m. and to them it's 3 p.m. Like you're moving from afternoon to evening, and it's time. Just man, time zones really mess me up. Yeah,
when I lived in Hawaii didn't do daylight savings time, so in the winter time to talk to my family, it was a 6 hour difference. And in the I forget which one. We fall back. So yeah, so in fall they would push the clocks back. So yeah, it was 6 hours, and then I believe in the summertime it was a 5 hour difference. But yeah, I used to get phone calls from my mom and dad. And they would call me, and I would say, oh, hey, what are you guys doing? And my mom would say, I'm just sitting here watching Oprah. What are you doing? I'd be like, we're having breakfast. it was crazy. I mean, and to call back home and to talk, you always had to coordinate phone calls sometime, especially if you wanted to talk at any length. And it was really funny on New Year's Eve, because it was a six-hour difference then. And I called home at 6 p.m. and I was talking to my family. My brother got on the phone, and because Hawaii is the last place to get the new year, and he was like, oh, just wait till you 2004 is amazing, just wait wait till you see it. And I was like, oh, I still got 6 hours to go.
That's so funny, man.
It is.
Oh, I had a time zone story, but I got wrapped up in yours and forgot about it.
Oh,
that's okay,
leave it to me. Well, I'm going to talk about and discuss the center of gravity. There's interesting facts about mass. It attracts things to it. The force of attraction, also known as gravity, between two objects depends on their mass and their distance between them. Simply said, gravity will pull towards the center of mass, towards the center mass of the objects. To find the center of mass, you have to examine the object. Consider a sphere. Okay, since a sphere has a consistent shape, no matter where you are on it, no matter where on it you stand, you have exactly the same amount of sphere under you. Again, imagine an ant walking around on a crystal ball. From the insect's point of view, the only indication of movement would be the fact that the ant is moving its feet. The shape of the surface would not change. A sphere's center of mass is in the center of the sphere, which means gravity will pull anything on the surface towards the center of the sphere, no matter where it's located. So there was a lot of flat earthers saying, well, how come when the astronauts are in outer space, that when they're looking at, everyone's just not upside down? Or if you're in the South Pole, why aren't you like standing upside down? Well, that explains why right there.
The sphere's center of mass is also what pulls the oceans inward.
Right.
So when they say, you know, how can you explain a a globe, the water would have no, because water runs to the easiest point, water would always just run and it wouldn't stay on the Earth.
Right.
If it wasn't flat.
Right, right.
But your explanation of the sphere's center of mass is what explains that.
Sure it does.
And last but not least, the images that we've actually gotten in the past 60 years of
space
exploration, we've launched satellites, probes, and people into space, and we've gotten them back. And
some of them.
Some of them still float through the solar system.
God, that'd be petrifying.
Not the people, the satellites.
Oh.
and they transmit amazing images over to our receivers on Earth. And in all of the photos, the Earth is...
It's
a spherical. It's a globe.
Right.
The curvature of the Earth is also visible in many photos snapped by astronauts on the International Space Station. You can see it, a recent example from ISS Commander Scott Kelly's Instagram. His account has a nice picture of the globe on it.
So. Right. And not only that, the Chinese have put a satellite, and I think it's as far away as 22,000 miles from the Earth, but it's so good, and you can go to the website and you can watch it in real time. So you can watch the Earth spin, but... Of course, people are saying that these are being faked and that the Earth looks CGI. Well, I would think it would from 22,000 miles out. But
yeah, I mean, it's going through a bunch of computers.
yeah, and putting everything back together again. But you know what? We just wanted to have some fun with this topic. Whatever you believe is cool with Subtle Beast. Everyone has their right to their belief. And if that's what you believe in your heart, then guess what? You're right. So... We just wanted to touch upon that, have some fun, give facts, play devil's advocate on each side, and just enjoy ourselves. So I hope you the listener did enjoy yourselves, because I sure had some fun tonight.
I did too, man. That topic was fun. It was fun to research it, and to bounce the ideas off of each other for the past week has been a great time.
Definitely.
Just picking out different little tidbits of information. A lot of respect to the Flat Earth Society. Love the fact that you've come up with this, and it was a great time researching it.
Yeah, because it takes a lot of courage to come out and state what you believe and stand behind it, especially when you're talking to people that believe the opposite. So my hat's off to you, and you know, stick to your guns if that's what you believe. But yeah, I had fun, and I'm looking forward to next time. But oh yeah, one more thing. So depending on where your stance is, flat or round, as far as the Earth's concerned, go out to our Facebook page and let us know why either the round earthers are wrong and the flat earthers are right, or vice versa, and share your opinion. Let's keep this conversation open as always and continue to have fun. Let's keep it friendly.
Right. Yeah. I would love to hear everyone's comments on this one.
Absolutely. Well, that does it for our show tonight. So until next time, I'm Foltz.
And I'm Steve.
And we'll see you next time. Take care of one another. Bye-bye.